Approximately 5,000 large-bodied animals, like elk, deer, bear, and antelope, are killed each year in vehicle collisions. The total number of wildlife killed on roads in Oregon is likely much higher when taken into account the numbers of small animals killed, like frogs, birds, coyotes, and even turtles. Of course, humans are also at risk, and some are also killed in collisions with wildlife on the roads. But there are efforts underway to address the problem. My next guest is Tim Geseth. He's the executive director of the Oregon Wildlife Foundation. Welcome, Tim.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
So before we dive into this issue, tell me about the Oregon Wildlife Foundation and your role there.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Oregon Wildlife Foundation was founded in 1981. It's the brainchild of members of the then Fish and Wildlife Commission and business leaders in the state. And the idea was to create a way for the public, members of the public, to participate in projects of a public benefit. And in this particular case, we're talking about wildlife conservation projects in Oregon. So we've been a kind of a mainstay of connecting the private side of Oregon with the public side of Oregon through donations and support for projects of all different kinds that relate to wildlife conservation around Oregon.
Well, how'd you get interested in this?
Well, my background is actually in youth development. I got my degree in psychology from the University of Montana and put it to work for a school district running an outdoor program, a youth conservation corps program, where it was teams of young adults working in the outdoors, building trails, helping with wetland restoration and those kinds of activities. And I did that for a number of years, and then this opportunity arose to work with the Oregon Wildlife Foundation as their executive director. And I thought, what the heck, I'll throw my hat in the ring, see what happens. And they hired me, and that was 17 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So proximity first.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So help me understand the scope of the problem of wildlife collisions with vehicles in Oregon.
Well, it's an extraordinarily complex issue and a problem throughout the state. I mean, if you drive any road, you're going to probably see a dead animal on the shoulder of the road.
Let me cut in real quick and just stop you right there, because the way to work today, this morning, I actually saw a dead animal that I had to run right over. And I was thinking about this conversation. And then as I came to a stop sign, there was a family of deer just hanging out. Yeah. And I thought, wow, okay. So the universe is telling me we do need to have this conversation.
Well, yeah, no, and that's it's absolutely correct. And I think that's what makes this makes it so salient for most people, is because virtually everyone who drives or spends any time on roads has seen a dead animal. A lot of people have had near misses. A lot of people have run into deer, had collisions themselves. So it's something most people identify with and understand. What I think is hard to grasp is kind of the scope of the problem. If you could really look carefully at a map of Oregon, you'd see a state that's truly crisscrossed with roads. Some of them very busy, some of them not so busy, but every road and every fence represents a barrier to the movement of wildlife. And right or wrong, just like people, wildlife need to move to live, whether it's finding mates, whether it's finding water and food, whether it's escaping predators, whether it's moving from habitats that's become poor because of wildfires or because of drought to habitat that's better. We have created and erected all sorts of barriers for wildlife that impede their movement. And so the solutions on roads, roads that have been around for a long time tend to be things like overcrossings, basically bridges for wildlife, and then underpasses going under these busy highways to allow wildlife to move between habitat patches to move from their winter range to their summer range. So those are the things that get the most attention. But, you know, things like fences can be modified to make it easier for wildlife to move. Gates can be dropped on private lands during migration season if cattle are put in the right place. So there's things that we can do that are you know, short of building an underpass or an overpass. But that's what we pay attention to.
When you talk about all these barriers we've built, the roads are crisscrossing the patterns for wildlife across the state. What's the, just in general numbers, what's the impact on their lives?
Yeah, I mean, at the top of the hour, we mentioned, the number of large-bodied animals killed in collisions is about 5,000, which is an undercount because it only includes those animals that are recovered by Oregon Department of Transportation and removed from the right-of-way. So many animals get hit by cars and die somewhere off the right-of-way. Research suggests that the number of large-bodied animals that we're seeing, you know, maybe 5,000 in Oregon on an annual basis, probably the real number is probably two or even three times that amount, because a lot of animals are not recovered in the right-of-way but die somewhere out in the brush. So even just on large-bodied animal size side, the problem is pretty significant. Then you get into small animals, and small animals are not included in those carcass recovery counts that Oregon Department of Transportation does, and which are the basis upon which we think about the magnitude of this problem. So, it's almost impossible to count the small animals because they're small, and there are species that will feed on that, on those carcasses, take them away. Oddly enough, birds of prey tend to be one of those species that get struck on highways more often than people might imagine, because they're there because they saw a dead squirrel, or they're there because they saw some other source of food, and then they themselves get struck as well. So, Mike, it's really the magnitude of the problem is really hard to understand because there are so many roads and so many different places where wildlife and roads unfortunately come together.
My guest is Tim Gresseth, Executive Director of the Oregon Wildlife Foundation. Tim, you're right. We're all accustomed to seeing dead animals on the road, and mostly small animals, and they're typically unrecognizable. What kind of small animals are most at risk out there?
Oh my gosh! I mean, it's as mentioned, wildlife needs to move to live. You know, it's finding, getting water, it's getting food, it's finding mates. And so, if you spend any time, even at your home, if you have a street out in front, you'll see squirrels crossing all the time. You'll see other kinds of wildlife trying to get across those roads. And what are they doing? Well, they're going about their lives. They're trying to get food. They're connecting with mates. They're doing what they need to do to live and perpetuate their own species. And roads are a true impediment to that. There are all sorts of examples of species that need to migrate or move. Frogs, for example, we have a project we're working on near the town of Linton in northwest Portland for red-legged frogs, who need wetlands to lay their eggs to create the next generation of frogs. But they spend most of their adult lives in the forest, and so they move from the slopes along busy Highway 30 down to the wetlands, the only real remaining wetland along the Willamette Channel, to lay their eggs. And of course, Highway 30 is very busy, and those frogs are very small, and literally thousands of them would get squashed every year. So, how do we get those frogs across the road? Well, a group of volunteers organized basically kind of a bucket brigade. The Harberton Frog Shuttle is about 100 volunteers strong, neighborhood people who gather during the migration season for red-legged frogs, gather them in buckets, and literally drive them across busy Highway 30, release them near the wetlands so they can lay their eggs. And then when those frogs are ready to make the return journey in about 3 months, volunteers are there again to gather them in buckets and drive them back across Highway 30 and release them in the forest.
So humans have become part of their ecosystem.
That's absolutely correct. And unfortunately, that's a beautiful story of support that we're lending to wildlife, but it's not really a sustainable solution. We can't do that forever. So we're trying to raise money to build a modified box culvert with a kind of a collecting barrier for frogs who are coming down that slope, so they can pass safely underneath Highway 30 through that culvert, rather than having to be gathered in buckets and driven across the road. But we've got a long ways to go to raise the money to make that happen.
How much money would you need?
Well, right now we're looking at about $1.4 million for the design and engineering phase of that project. And construction costs, because we're so early, it's hard to know exactly what those are going to look like. But we're probably looking at somewhere between $3 to $4 million for construction.
Okay, and that's one project. How many others are you planning, or do you need?
Well, gosh, we also have another, talking about small animals again, we have another project along Highway 101 that we're working on with a whole collection of agencies and nonprofits, and that's for coastal martin, or Humboldt martin, they're called. We have a very small number that remain in Oregon, about 71 total. But as you can imagine, if you only have a population of 71, everyone that gets smacked on the road is really causing true harm to the future of the population itself. So we are looking at modifying existing infrastructure like culverts and bridges to try to make suitable crossing locations for that small martin along Highway 101. So that's between the Siuslaw River all the way down to the north spit of Coos Bay is sort of the area that we're focused on. So that's another small species that, diminutive, right? Small, people don't really notice. You ran up, maybe you probably ran it over, you didn't even know. No fault, except that we can do something about that, and that's, retrofit some of these existing culverts. We don't even have to build new structure. We can just take advantage of what's already there and try to create passage opportunities for these smaller species.
Well, how do animals know to use the animal crosswalks?
Yeah, it was a running joke here about 15 years ago, where the animals crossing sign, it was suggested that the animals were looking and reading the sign so they knew where they would cross the road. That's not how it works. We need to help animals find the place where they can cross safely, and that's usually where fencing comes in. So a typical undercrossing or overcrossing will have maybe 2 to 3, sometimes more, miles of fencing to guide animals towards the location of the overcrossing or undercrossing.
Okay.
So that's how they find it. We actually have to help them. Over time, they'll become habituated to crossing at that location, and so the fencing becomes maybe less important.
Right.
But initially, that's what makes these projects work.
Okay, so tell me about the timetable for completing some of these projects that you have and the costs involved.
Yeah, well, so, for an undercrossing and overcrossing on a major highway or an interstate, we're talking something probably on the order of $10 million to $15 million, $15 million for maybe an overcrossing. And the timetable for something like that is not insignificant. As you can imagine, you're talking about a major infrastructure project. So we're, typically full design and engineering is probably 2 years once you know where you want to put the crossing. And then from there, you need to have the money to actually construct it. So you're looking at probably another 2 to 3 years to actually get the crossing structure actually in place and working. So start to finish, probably 6 to 7 years for a individual crossing location.
For one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got about 30 seconds, and I'm going to ask you a big question.
Okay.
Where does this funding come from?
That's a great question. In short, the state of Oregon is starting to develop some sources of its own, but typically the funding for these comes from federal sources. We're in an era right now where the federal government has pulled back from supporting things like this. So we're going to have to find our support at the local level, the state level, and from private supporters.
Okay, so that's plan B.
That is plan B, yeah.
Okay, thanks. That's all the time we have. Thank you, Tim.
Appreciate it, Mike. Thank you so much for having me on.